Hello, I'm Brandon House. Do you appreciate the free programs at worldviewradio.com, WVWTV.com? Do you appreciate the fact we put out a 24-hour-a-day stream of free television? By the way, did you know that's free for you to watch, but it's not free to us? We spend thousands of dollars a month in pushing out free programming. We have to pay the bandwidth. Every time someone listens to a radio show, watches a TV show, we get a bill. We have to pay the bandwidth bill. That comes to thousands of dollars a month, not counting the cost of our IT guys and all the other costs that go with producing television, the guys in the control room, and so much more. If you appreciate WVW Broadcast Network, would you partner with us? You can partner with us and help us push out free programming as a ministry of WVW Foundation, because you know what we could do? Put it all behind a paywall. But instead, we said, let's not do that. Let's push out programming for free as a ministry of the WVW Foundation. Would you please consider making a contribution right now at WVWFoundation.com? That's WVWFoundation.com. You'll also find our mailing address there if you prefer to support us through the mail. You can also use our phone number and make a contribution over the phone by calling 901-468-9357, 901-468-9357. Thank you for supporting free programming through WVWFoundation.com.
This is Brandon House Live. Whether the issue is law, science, economics, history, family, social issues, education, religion, government, or national security, Brannon brings the issues of the day into clear focus through the lens of a Judeo-Christian worldview. And now, here is your host, Brannon House.
All right, good evening. Glad you are with us. We are going to be joined tonight by Leo Holman. We're going to have a panel. We're going to have a panel, and we're going to even maybe endeavor to open it up for phone calls. Leo Holman, Patrick Wood, and Tom DeWeese. Woohoo! So tweet, text, email, Facebook, Twitter, social, Frank Social, Truth Social. Spread the word far and wide. We have a big old panel tonight, and we're going to talk about a North American Union. We're going to talk about what's been going on in Davos all week. They're calling like Tony Blair. Calling for social tracking, COVID passports. They're calling for hate crime laws here in America. They're talking about how they're coming to America. They want to try to shut us down. Can't say anything about LGBTQ agenda. Can't say anything about Islam. Can't say anything about illegal immigrants. That's racist, don't you know? Sheila Jackson Lee and her new little piece of legislation. If you criticize the border and illegal immigrants pouring over the border, that's white supremacy. That should be a hate crime. Hate speech. So we'll talk about Davos, the North American Union. We'll talk about the history of all this, kicking off with George W. Bush. I'm going to play a couple clips tonight that I played on my TV/radio show the other day, but I think this audience will enjoy it as well. So we've got a lot to get to. Let's get to it right away. Joining me now is the very distinguished panel of Patrick Wood of Technocracy.news. Patrick Wood of Technocracy.news. By the way, he's got a brand new show with my network over at WVWTV.com. You can watch it live or on demand, WVWTV.com. We also have with us Tom DeWeese of AmericanPolicy.com, AmericanPolicy.com. And then we have with us Leo Holman of LeoHolman.com. Gentlemen, welcome back to the broadcast. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Hey, Brandon.
Yes. Great to be with
you. Great to have you.
Hello.
With us. Yes.
Brandon.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, did I get it right? Is it AmericanPolicy.com or .org, Tom?
.org.
Okay, AmericanPolicy.org. AmericanPolicy.org. Now, Tom and I have been working together since the early 90s. So we've been working a long time together, Tom. And, of course, we're glad to have working now a long time with, not as long, but working obviously for the last few years with Patrick and Leo. But this is something we've been talking about for a long, long time, Tom. The Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, North American Union. But you know what? We're now seeing Americans are waking up to realizing what we were talking about in the early 90s and what Patrick was writing about on the Trilateral Commission back so many years ago, even when Barry Goldwater's staff was tracking what he was writing about. These things are all now being revealed to be true.
Yeah, they are. And I've never been busier. People are saying, how did you know? How did you know? And, pulling all of these policies together, these crazy things we're seeing happen to our economy, to our food supply, to our property rights, on and on and on, is what we warned about all that time. And now we're seeing with what Klaus Schwab is doing. And now we have the Biden meeting with the heads of Canada and Mexico coming together with this declaration of North America is just the revival of the North American Union. And all of this stuff fits together in a very, very neat package, getting us all. And one of the things that's interesting in this declaration is that they said that there are six pillars that they're working on. And the six pillars are diversity, equity, inclusion, climate change and the environment, competitiveness, migration and development, health and regional security. Every one of those things that we've been talking about through Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, that this was a blueprint for the reorganization of human society. And this is exactly what they're talking about here.
Indeed they are. I want to play a clip for you guys to start commenting. We're going to play a lot of clips tonight. Here is a clip. This is a very young Bret Baier. This was back in 2006. I believe this was in Quebec. But this is where the president of Mexico and Canada, Prime Minister of Canada, President of Mexico, met with George W. Bush in Quebec. And they were talking about, quote, the Security Prosperity Partnership. And they used that term, listening friends, because they didn't want to say North American Union. So they use the term security, prosperity, and partnership, because who can be opposed to security and prosperity? I don't know. We're all for that, security and prosperity, right? So they did want to say North American Union, so they called it the Security Prosperity Partnership. And they said, we'll start with trade, and then we'll move on down from there until we do things behind closed doors with a bunch of unelected people who are part of NGOs, non-government organizations, until you find out, you wake up, your sovereignty is gone. It's been traded away. So here is a very young Bret Baier asking this question. Watch this.
As you three leaders meet here, there are a growing number of people in each of your countries who have expressed concern about the Security and Prosperity Partnership. This is addressed to all three of you. Can you say today that this is not a prelude to a North American Union, similar to a European Union? Are there plans to build some kind of superhighway connecting all three countries? And do you believe all of these theories about a possible erosion of national identity stem from a lack of transparency from this partnership?
Well, all right, so they're going to answer, but that's a pretty good question. Would you guys like, would you like to hear how President Bush responded to that? The other leaders went first, but then here's how President Bush responded to a very young Bret Baier. Watch this.
Respect each other's sovereignty. You know, there are some who would like to frighten our fellow citizens into believing that relations between us are harmful for our respective peoples. I just believe they're wrong. I believe it's in our interest to trade. I believe it's in our interest to dialogue. I believe it's in our interest to work out common problems for the good of our people. And I'm amused by some of the speculation, some of the old, you call them political scare tactics. If you've been in politics as long as I have, you get used to that kind of technique, where you lay out a conspiracy and then force people to try to prove it doesn't exist. That's just the way some people operate.
Mr. President.
Interesting. Patrick, you want to respond first?
Well, they denied everything initially, including the Trans-Texas Corridor, and we busted them. I mean, we absolutely exposed it right down to the bare metal. Tom, you were there. I know you fought this in 2005 and 6. We all did. I don't know if you remember, one person that could give some really interesting testimony would be Jerry Corsi. Corsi fought this tooth and nail back then, even went up in a big protest in Canada. They stripped him bare. And as it ended up in the end, they were so embarrassed, they were so shamed by the outrage that the American people put on him. They not only canceled the program, but they actually withdrew the website. They killed the website. that was promoting SPP. And Bush was just absolutely, I don't know if you could say he's lying through his teeth, but he evaded every question that Bear asked and intimated that it was a conspiracy, that the Trans-Texas Corridor was a conspiracy. In fact, it was the biggest program, it was the biggest sovereignty-busting program that ever could have been implemented in America, probably in our entire history. And we discovered exactly what it was all about, exposed it, and that pretty much was the end of it at the time.
Leo?
Well, I think it was interesting there that he used the term conspiracy, because as we know, that's a CIA-invented term.
Yeah, his daddy was the head of the CIA.
Exactly.
And it came out after the killing of a sitting president, JFK, which the CIA likely had something to do with it. And some speculate this picture of a shadowy George H. Bush on the street of Dallas is indeed George H. Bush.
Right. So, you know, that's an old trick, you know, to accuse your opposition of exactly what you are trying to accomplish, which was a conspiracy. You bring it in as a trade block. And, you know, as he said, it's just relations. And who could oppose better relations between our three countries? Of course, nobody would. But if you infer that it might be leading towards more than that, you're a conspiracy theorist. Now, the other thing I thought was interesting from that clip was his body language, especially in the very beginning as he got hit with that question from Brett Baer. You saw him kind of tilt his head like this and start stuttering. That is the body language of a flat-out liar.
tell us how you really feel, Leo.
Yeah. I mean, that's just not the body language of someone who's being frank and open and truthful and transparent. It's just not.
And of course, you have to wonder, don't you, Tom, how many of these people in Texas, of course, he was the governor of Texas before he's president, but you have to wonder how many of these people in Texas started buying up land and doing all kinds of things to get ready for this big Texas corridor that was going to come. I bet there was a lot of people he knows that were already making some very serious investments along the way to make a lot of money. I see all three of you agreeing with this. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, they always know, those insiders know what's coming next and how to get on in front of the train. But the truth of the matter is that the other people who were in the path of this thing were having their property rights absolutely ripped out by the roots. And in fact, the possibility of the way they were going to build that Trans-Texas Corridor, which, by the way, no local governments, no state governments would have any jurisdiction over it whatsoever. It was just going to go right through all these different states, I think going all the way up to Minneapolis. And the way it was going to work is that let's say you had a big ranch and you had a barn on the other side of what would be the corridor, and your house is on the other side of it. And if you wanted to get to your barn, you were going to have to drive about 50 miles around to get to your barn. If you had school buses, emergency equipment, fire, hospitals and so forth, trying to get through there, school buses, they weren't going to be able to travel through it. And this is going to just cut the state right in half as they put it in place.
And it finally died. Is it on hold, or where's it going now? Anybody know?
Yeah, let me.
What happened with it? I'm sorry, Pat. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, Pat.
Well, I was just going to say, they didn't count on Oklahoma. Oklahoma said, over our dead body, are you coming through Oklahoma? And they turned them around at the border and sent them back. It became known as the Texas turnaround.
Yeah.
Oklahoma was batting a wet hen. They blocked them legislatively.
The folks in some folks in Texas that I know very well, Margaret and Dan Byfield and so forth in their organization, they put together what was called coordination. They found three communities that were so small, the mayor didn't even get a salary. But the rule was that the government agencies putting this thing through had to meet with these people around the table. And they were trained by Margaret and Dan to not allow this to go through. They said, no, you can't bring this into our community. They brought out what I just mentioned about fire and police and so forth, and school buses can't get through, property rights ripped out. And they said, no. Then they tried to get another path to go through another way. They got two more communities to stand up to it, and they said no. Finally, they had to say, nope, no build. We can't get through this. And that's how they stopped it.
Wow. And for all those people that think this was a conspiracy, we just heard then President George W. Bush say this is a conspiracy. Well, that's interesting because one of the people he was meeting with was then at the time President Vicente Fox. Well, after he was no longer president, Vicente Fox went on Larry King. And this is what Larry King had to say about the supposed conspiracy theory that turns out was really reality. Listen to what Larry King asked Vicente Fox, former president of Mexico, that was negotiating on a North American union.
Email from Mrs. Gonzalez in Elizabeth, New Jersey. Mr. Fox, I'd like to know how you feel about the possibility of having a Latin America united with one currency.
Long-term, very long-term. What we propose together...
Okay, wait a minute. Long-term, long-term, very long-term. He didn't say no. He said long-term. Then he's going to say what we propose to do. So in other words, here's what we propose to do before we go there. Watch this.
Propose together, President Bush and myself, it's ALCA, which is a trade union for all of the Americas. And everything was running fluently until Hugo Chavez came. And he decided to isolate himself. He decided to combat the idea and destroy the idea. And very unfortunately...
It's going to be like the euro dollar, you mean?
Well, that would be long, long term.
Like the euro dollar. That will be long, long term. Are you seeing this for the first time, Leo?
Yes, and Mr. Fox is a heck of a lot more honest than George W.
Yeah, he is. I just love your reaction because I could tell you were seeing this for the first time. So Larry King is like, is this going to be like the European Union and Euro? Long, long, long time. Down the road.
Long
here we go. Let's pick it back up.
Yeah, and they're unfortunately...
It's going to be like the euro dollar, you mean?
Well, that would be long, long term. I think the process is to go first step into a trading agreement. And then further on, a new vision like we're trying to do with NAFTA.
Wow. Well, it all started out with NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. So it started out just with that. There was a step process to this. Was there not, Patrick?
You know, there's a history with the Trilateral Commission here. And, you know, I'll never miss an opportunity to bring it up.
Good for you.
The entire Agenda 21 program initially was codified and strategized by members of the Trilateral Commission. When Vicente Fox came along as president of Mexico, nobody suspected that he was also a member of the Trilateral Commission. And what they were executing was Trilateral Commission policy. And by the way, I sent a copy, a picture, a graphic image to Logan, I think it was yesterday or whatever, on the so-called NASCO map that depicted the north of the corridor that went up from Mexico, from Manzanillo, all the way up into Canada. If he can find that, a picture's worth 1,000 words.
Can you find that in his emails, Thomas?
No, it's in the chat stream on Skype.
In the chat stream on Skype, Thomas. See if you can find that. If you do, just throw it up while we're talking. Otherwise, ask Logan where it's at. Tell us more about what that map's going to show us, Patrick.
The map's going to show that exactly where they intended to put the corridor. They were going to have a deep water port built down in Manzanillo, Mexico, and they were going to have a high-speed train established there all the way up through the border, no stopping at the border, just using electronic manifest to whip it on through. And they intended to send those trains directly up to Kansas City, which was designated to be an inland port, they called it. And so anything that came in from China on those ships that went into Mexico got on those trains. They would have entered the heartland of our country. In fact, Kansas City is the center of our country. And they were going to distribute goods from there out to the rest of the country. Some of those goods were slated, of course, to go directly to Canada. And the map shows the rest of the corridor going into Canada, into various places, coast to coast. This was an insane scheme, and it was so poorly thought through, as Tom brought out, that it's inconceivable that they would even dare to expose it to daylight. It was just embarrassing. They had no contingency planning whatsoever. They didn't think through the practical issues of it. And they just expected everybody to roll over, I guess, and say, oh, that's what a wonderful idea. Yeah, please cut our country in half and, you know, put an inland port up in, you know, Kansas City so the Chinese can send, you know, nuclear or whatever up there and blow our country up. No, that's not the way it works. But this was a trilateral program, a trilateral commission policy program from the get-go, absolutely positively.
And, you know, what I find very fascinating is Thomas is talking to Logan trying to find that map. Many, many years ago, I found a website, if you want to show this here, Thomas, the European Union Commission's calling for 10 world unions. This was many years ago. The URL is there. That doesn't work anymore when you try to go to it. But that's where it was. That's where it was. The European Union Commission is calling for 10 regions, North American Union, Central American Caribbean, South America, Western Europe, Eastern Europe and Central Asia, Mediterranean and Middle East, Africa, Northeast and South Asia, Southeast Asia, Australia and Pacific. Then we found this on the UN website a few years ago, dividing the world into 10 regions. So again, what I found interesting is that Daniel chapter 17 seems to describe the 10 horns, which you saw are 10 kings who have received no kingdom as of yet, meaning the time when John the Revelator was writing, but they receive authority for 1 hour, meaning as a short time, as kings with the beast. And these are of one mind, and they will give their power and authority to the beast. Well, it seems to imply here that they're toward the end of time, when the one world leader comes about, the world's going to be divided into a place where you have 10 leaders, 10 kings, 10 regions. Again, my theory, and many others, you know, agree with me if you want to come back to me, Thomas, but this seems to be where we're headed, dividing the world into 10 regions. It seems to fit with Bible prophecy, and then all of a sudden you give your authority, the 10 world assistants give their authority to a one world leader. So it seems as though they need some kind of catastrophe, though, to bring this about. I don't know how many... Leo?
If I could just interject, Brandon, I mean, yeah, it seems like major redrawings of the global maps typically take place after what? World wars.
Yes.
It happened after World War I. It happened again after World War II. And if anyone's been following the news, it's actually not making big headlines right now. But if you look at the headlines on the interior pages, let's say, of major news organizations right now, you will find out that both sides, the NATO countries and the Russia, China, Iran, North Korea axis of countries, are preparing for a global conflagration. NATO is now sending divisions, major groupings of tanks, armored tanks, to Ukraine, which Putin is now saying has crossed a red line. We're also sending Patriot missiles and training the Ukrainians how to use them. And Putin, meanwhile, is sending submarines armed with his Poseidon hypersonic missiles into sensitive areas, provoking the NATO powers. So both sides are making very provocative military moves. There is no question in my mind that we are heading towards World War III. And after that war, the fallout from that war is probably where you will see the major redrawings of the global map.
And or an economic collapse.
Oh, yeah.
Or both. They could all Correct. Occur at the same time, right?
The economic collapse could happen even, you know, simultaneously, right? And to get Americans' minds off of their own misery, we go to war.
The reason I mentioned the economic collapse is because I've been quoting this book for years, and I've quoted it several times this week. John Stormer's book, None Dare Call It Treason. I don't know how many of you knew John personally.
I have that book, Brandon.
Fascinating book. Ronald Reagan used to order it by the case and give it away. It sold 7 million copies. And I've interviewed John.
Still very relevant today.
Oh, my word, yes. Well, in this book, John Stormer, who passed away a few years ago, but I had the chance to interview him several times and speak at some conferences with him. But in this book, and I spent a lot of time on this last couple of days of my radio show, but I want to mention it here because you just can't mention it too much. There were a group of Democrats and Republicans that wanted to transform America's government to a parliamentary system. And Phyllis Schlafly was specifically, the late Phyllis Schlafly, was specifically writing a lot about this group and warning. And I interviewed her about a North American Union several times. I need to pull out some of those clips and play them here in the next week or so. But it was known as the Committee on the Constitutional System. The Committee on the Constitutional System. And here's what Phyllis Schlafly wrote. The Parliamentary Government Group, as they were known, the Parliamentary Government Group, because they are unhappy with our American separation of powers and want to change it to a European-style parliamentary process. The CCS, which stands for the Committee on the Constitutional System, their members aggressively seek large-scale reforms in our constitutional structure and hope that a depression, listen now, a depression in the near future will create a favorable climate for these changes. They want to be ready to apply radical reform if the opportunity arises through a major economic crisis, end quote. So here they were saying we can restructure the government and maybe move America to a parliamentary system. And when they did that, they were hoping that they could radically change the country. She says they would do this by adopt a more efficient parliamentary system by eliminating the checks and balances and separation of powers in the present Constitution. Change the terms of office of all elected federal officials so that the president, senators, and congressmen will be elected at the same time for concurrent terms of 4 years each. Adopt taxpayer financing of congressional campaigns. Repeal two-term constitutional limitation for presidents. Limit Congress to 5 terms and abolish the Electoral College. Of course, if you abolish the Electoral College, you would have never had Donald Trump. Include procedures for forcing a president to resign and Congress to dissolve when there is a, quote, loss of public confidence, end quote. Eliminate two-thirds vote required in the Senate for ratification of treaties to make it easier for future presidents to make agreements with foreign powers. Well, there's so much there because, as we all know, Bill Clinton got NAFTA through, which was the part of this North American Union, the beginning of it, was through not a treaty but an agreement, which just required a majority in the House and the Senate. So here these guys were many, many years earlier, and this is a bunch of George H. Bush's friends and a bunch of Democrats all in agreement, the Uniparty. We got to transform America into a parliamentary system, and maybe an economic crisis will be what allows for radical change. I think maybe they've given up on transforming America with a parliamentary system and just build a North American parliamentary system over top of America with their own North American courts, North American justice system, and North American tribunals and laws. Go first, please, Tom DeWeese.
Absolutely. I'm going to quote from an article that I wrote in 2007. It was titled, The North American Union is Really a Debate Over Political Ideology. And one of the things in here that I noticed goes right along with what you're saying, a Mexican economist and researcher named Miguel Picard wrote in an article that he had published detailing the deep integration plan for a North American Union. He said there will be no single treaty and nothing will be submitted to legislatures of the three countries. Instead, he said the plans for a merged future will be implemented through the signing of regulations not subject to citizen review. That is, you know, goes along with all of that. And we are now facing, I mean, there is a big attack now on the Electoral College, a whole bunch of those other things you mentioned. And dare I say that this drive for an Article 5 Convention of States will be the beginning, it will be the place where all of those things you just mentioned will be put in place.
Patrick?
Oh, yes. Let me tell you, there's been such discussion over a constitutional convention. I run across it all the time, and some of the strangest people that you'd expect, you would think would reject it and never even consider it are considering it. There are some very high-profile people in America.
Sean Hannity, Mark Levin, Mark Meckler, Rick Santorum.
Yep. Glad you mentioned it. But listen, here's all I need to know. I would encourage everybody else just to think this way, too. The first two people that called for a constitutional convention, the first two ever, Henry Kissinger and Zbigniew Brzezinski, back in the early 1970s, when they were trying to wipe out, you know, they were pursuing their new international economic order at the time. They were in process of taking over the trade machinery within the United States government. And they both called for a constitutional convention to change the way things are done currently. That's all I need to know. Are you kidding me? How could anybody with it? I mean, look back at the history of this. How could anybody pursue that today, knowing that the whole thing was started by the likes of Henry Kissinger and Zbigniew Brzezinski? Escapes me.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I find very interesting is an article by my friend Dennis Cuddy. He wrote an article in 2007, The North American Union and the Larger Plan. In this, he quotes from a document known as the North American Future 2025 Project. Today, I went and searched it out, found it, and printed it out. The North American Future 2025 document. Now, it was, again, referenced by Dennis Cuddy in his article in 2007. So in 2007, they had a plan for bringing about a North American Future 2025. North American Union 2025. Now, what's
Who was president in 2007, Brannon?
That would have been George W. Bush.
Exactly.
And of course, Bill Clinton is the one who before that was pushing the NAFTA and got a lot of this done. Of course, the Bushes and the Clintons are real tight, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it looks like the Obamas and the Bushes and the Clintons are kind of tight. Certainly the Bushes and the Obamas. But what's very interesting, I think you guys will find this particularly interesting. I've mentioned this several times over the years, but it's having more and more relevance. Here they are calling for this North American Union by 2025. Now, I know they had wanted to do it by 2010. They didn't make it. Then they reset their sights on 2025. I want to point you to this slide. This is from one of the books by occultist Alice Bailey. As you guys know, this is about 100 years ago. About 100 years ago, Alice Bailey, who had a demon she consulted with, known as the Tibetan, who helped her write her books. They wrote 10,000 pages together. She became the spiritual mentor to Robert Mueller at the UN, the Assistant Secretary General of the UN. And of course, they added the prayer room, which I'll let any of you talk about that maybe have been there. But about 100 years ago, she said, the inner structure of the World Federation of Nations will eventually be equally well organized, with its outer form taking rapid shape by 2025.
Wow.
That's written like 100 years ago, guys.
Well, I mean, you think about it, with what's happening in the world right now, it would appear that we're going to World War III either in 2023 or 2024. If we go to war, a major world war in 2023, it could be over by 2025. And that's when they roll out the what did she call it? Confederation of Nations?
Federation of Nations.
Yeah. Yeah. And that could be the 10 regions.
Patrick?
I would, I follow along with you completely on the thread here. I'm always cautious about predicting the future, very cautious, because we really don't have a crystal ball. There's lots of things we don't know, and we've been constantly surprised for the last 25 years on stuff that's happened, stuff that hasn't happened that we swore was going to happen. Time will tell, and time will prove what is right and what is wrong. But in the meantime, the risk in being too forecasty or too, crystal ballish, I guess, is that if we take that and take action on those things and it turns out to be wrong, then we spun our wheels a lot and perhaps wasted money and time and all resources, et cetera. It could be. You could say it's coming at some point. I think that's pretty obvious. The question is when. Timing? We just don't know. We know that the global elite have plans for 2030. That's a big date for them. But they also had plans for 2015. They missed most of those deadlines. In fact, that's why they got the 2030 agenda, because the 2015s, you know, by that time the thing had expired and, well, we didn't make it, guys. We better try again. So, you know, they think long term. We think long term, too, trying to track along with, you know, when stuff is actually going to happen. The question, for instance, like, when are CBDCs going to come into play? Are they ready yet? Personally, you look at the technology and the people work on it. No, they're not. It's still just rhetoric mostly. So could they have that done in 2023? Very likely not. Now, a lot of people are saying it will be 2023. But the evidence and, you know, the facts of it, you look at it, you say these guys are basically running around, you know, like a Chinese fire drill trying to get their software together. It isn't together yet. And it's going to take testing. It's going to take time to get it rolled out and stuff. So we will, all I can say is we will see on these things. We got them. Otherwise, we have the plan. We know what their plan is. The question is, how far will it go? How far can they drive it? And don't forget, we are the resistance as well. We are mounting up resistance all around the world like never before. They did not count on this.
Which I think makes the time more dangerous because they have to do something stupendous. I agree with you. We don't want to be date setters. And I'm not quoting the North American Future 2025 project or Alice Bailey's quote about 2025 because I say this is their time frame. What I'm saying is the fact that she wrote that 100 years ago, that they have been talking about 2025, 2030, and we know that many of these people are fooling around with the occult. We know that many of them are into pagan spirituality, New Age paganism. They like to use the symbolism of the occult. We've seen the opening of that tunnel. Where was it? In Switzerland, Leo, where they had a goat's head and people dancing around with no clothes on, engaged in what looked like lesbian activity with all the bureaucrats sitting there as they opened this tunnel for this train. We also saw the opening ceremony over there in Great Britain. What was that for, Leo? Remember?
Yeah, that was the Commonwealth Games in
July, which had, and we'll bring it up here in a minute, which had this gigantic beast. And then this woman with these crystals, which are blatantly New Age, these New Age crystals falling all over the globe, she picks it up, she takes it in front of the beast, and she uses it to tame the beast. And next thing you know, she, the woman, is up on top of the beast, right? And they're all doing this in front of what looks like a Tower of Babel, surrounded by water, and then all of a sudden, up out of the water, comes all these people dancing up out of the water, which looks, again, like what you see in the scriptures. In other words, these people seem to be following a demonic spiritual plan. And when Alice Bailey is consulting with a demon she called the Tibetan 100 years ago, giving these dates, and we know that major leaders are following Alice Bailey and her Lucifer Trust, that they changed the name to from Lucifer Trust to Lucius. It was Lucifer Trust. They changed it to Lucis Trust because people freaked out, right? So, I mean, they're not hiding this. So, yes, we're not setting dates, but we know these people follow Bailey and others, and they're big into numerology. Dates and symbols and symbolism is important, or they wouldn't put them in these ceremonies, would they, Leo?
Absolutely not. And I would also say that while maybe they feel a little bit desperate right now, I think it's a danger for us to overemphasize that. Because you think about last year's Davos meeting, 1 year ago, Klaus Schwab opened the meeting by saying that we need to prepare for an angrier world. So they knew that their policies in the forthcoming year were going to tick off a lot of people and make us very angry, and a lot of people getting out in the streets. There's a big, huge protest planned, I'm told, this weekend for in France. That it is going to be just massive. I don't think this comes as a complete surprise to these globalist elites. I think they knew that it was coming because why? They're telling us to drastically change our lifestyles. We can't drive gas-powered vehicles anymore. We shouldn't have natural gas stoves in our kitchens. We need to turn our thermostats down and sit in the dark and eat bugs. I mean, what did they think? Did they really think that we were just going to lay over and say, yeah, bring it on? No, they knew that the global populations were going to rise up at some point and have to be what? Put down. And don't kid yourself. They are fully prepared to put down in the most violent way possible some of these protests. We saw it in Brazil, where thousands of people have been arrested and are now sitting in the equivalent of the DC gulag here, with what happened in the United States when we the people, you know, came out to the Capitol in numbers like 500,000 to a million on January 6, 2021. And some of those people are still sitting in the DC gulag without any trials. And so this is a new oppressive political, global oppressive political system. It does not respect free and fair elections. It will not hesitate to put the boot on your face if you get too far out of hand. And they expect it, and they're prepared to deal with it because they own all of the police forces of the world, with the exception of some constitutional sheriff's offices here in the United States. They own them all, and they own the militaries of the world. They're meeting in Davos right now to huddle up and have private meetings. Who's protecting them? 5,000 troops from the Swiss Army. Now, what private club is able to convene a meeting and get a nation's army to protect it? I mean, this is a force that we cannot underestimate, and I think they have a contingency plan for uprisings around the world.
I agree, and they seem to know that it's going to take a crisis to do it. We heard what Phyllis Schlafly said. They're hoping for the Republicans and Democrats are hoping for some kind of depression or economic crisis to do this. Let's look at this footage here on my computer. This is the Goodwill Games opening in Great Britain last year. And notice what looks like a Tower of Babel, if you want to go to that, Thomas. And now notice the Tower of Babel is on fire. Okay, so this is to represent the world and the world coming together. But for a short period of time, it was on fire. Then they pushed their New Age crystals together. And then all of a sudden, you start seeing the fire is out. We got harmony. And now here in around the moat, you have out of the waters rising the people. Again, I could go to scripture right out of Revelation that seems to describe this chaos right here. But then later in this demonstration, you see this beast shows up, right? And they use this angry beast with its red eyes, and they use this New Age cosmic crystal looking thing to put in front of the beast to tame it. And pretty soon it comes back out, and the red eyes are gone, and it's been tamed. And, of course, you got King George. He wasn't king, but he's there now. It's just all really kind of weird because we know Joan Vian, or however you said her name, years ago said that it was Prince Charles that got them all together on his yacht before the Earth Summit in Rio, and now he's king, and this is all kind of falling into place. Tom?
Yeah. Yeah, I really think that King Charles believes that all of this, the whole sustainable development, the whole pulling together of all of this is what's going to reinstate the power of the kingdom, kingdomship there in England, and become the world power on that. And then, with the Davos meeting that just started again, Schwab said that this is going to be the year of the poly crisis. And he talks about how they have to double down on the ESG policies.
You're on my computer.
Amid shortages, inflation, and resisting rising dissent. And, you know, that's the whole thing. I'm watching how they are, trying to brainwash people all across, regular people around the world, particularly the United States. Well, we have to understand the United States is their number one target because we are the one nation that was created with the idea that you have rights that you were born with, God-given rights, and it was government's job to protect those rights. Almost every other country on earth is created to where whatever gang is in charge decides what your rights are. And so we have been the number one target, and using the school systems, using the news media, everything around us, to put this plan together and get people to accept these ideas of globalism and the global economy, and now, and the other thing they're targeting now are the corporations. The corporations are part of the whole cabal, and they're using their advertising budgets, they're using the products that they sell and how they're made and so forth to put this whole process in place. And in other words, we completely reconstruct the United States and the world and our whole system of economics, our whole system of how we how we live, our cultures, and it happens quietly in the background through these kinds of processes.
Absolutely. And that footage while you were talking was that beast coming out there this last summer with the red eyes, and then they tame it. And you saw they were pulling it with chains like we were enslaved. I mean, holy cow. And to think that they don't know the imagery of what they're doing, I mean, it's just quite shocking.
Well.
Now, you mentioned something very interesting a while ago, Patrick, and that was the first Constitutional Convention was called for by Henry Kissinger. And yet we see the New York Post a few years ago saying that the one that mentored Klaus Schwab was Henry Kissinger. So let's transition. How does the call for a Constitutional Convention, a North American Union, how does that fit in with a World Economic Forum and the Great Reset?
Number one, the Great Reset is tightly coupled to sustainable development with the United Nations. The World Economic Forum and the UN are inseparable. They cross-reference each other on their websites. They talk, one's the business side, one is the whatever governance side. So they basically should be seen one as the same. As we go back and look at sustainable development, it's a resource-based economic system. This really, in my opinion, nothing more than warmed over technocracy from the 1930s. That was the system that was invented at Columbia University originally, in which is Rockefeller-backed university, by the way, in the early 1930s in the heat of the Great Depression. This is what Brzezinski brought back to the table with Rockefeller when they founded the Trilateral Commission and intended to create a new international economic order. We didn't know what the word new meant at the time, back in the 70s, but I do now. What they meant with new was, yes, new. They were going to implement this new system of sustainable, what they ultimately called sustainable development. They changed the name, just marketing name. It's been called other things like green economy, Green New Deal, Agenda 21, lots of different names for it. But this was the plan. This was the original plan, was to flip-flop the economic system altogether, to kill capitalism and free enterprise and implement this new Great Reset style system of sustainable development, where resources are controlled down to the gnat's whisker. You will consume what they tell you to consume. You will make what they tell you to make. And there will be no discussion in between, no political process to appeal to. You just do it or else. Like Anthony Fauci said, follow the science. And if you attack me, you're not attacking me. You're attacking the science.
Wow. Let's go to this screen here. Here is Leo Holman's latest article tonight. Pandering to the New World Order. American politicians sell us out to international criminal syndicate with blood on its hands. You talked about, one of you mentioned getting control of us. I mean, can you imagine if there wasn't this broadcast or your show now, Patrick, that airs on my channel at WVWTV.com, or your organization and website, Leo, or your organization and website, Tom, and your show. I mean, can you imagine if all of these things stop, where we're telling people? Because that is what has caused people to rise up. When we were doing this in the early 90s and you were doing this in the 70s, Patrick, we were talking to a pretty small crowd. Now with the advancement of internet, we're competing with the big dogs. You watch this channel, you watch Fox News, and the programming, the screen, the lower thirds, the ability to go to clips and cuts looks very much like Fox News, right? This used to take 10, 20, 30, 40 million, $100 million to do. Now we're doing it, for in the hundreds of thousands, what used to be millions. And for some, it's less. But the reality is we're able to compete now and reach an audience without going through the corporate media. Now we see the people waking up, which is why they're electing America First people that are opposing this. So the question is, how do they shut it down? They have to shut down the opposition. It seems from coming out of Davos, one of the ways is going to be hate crime speech. Listen to what is embedded in Leo's article tonight over at leoholman.com, coming out of the World Economic Forum. Listen to this.
Well, we need the people who understand the language and the case law in the country, because what qualifies as hate speech, as illegal hate speech, which you will have soon also in the U.S., I think that we have a strong reason why we have this in the criminal law. We need the platforms to simply work with the language and to identify such cases. The AI, which you will have soon also in the U.S.
Okay, so you're going to have the hate speech law soon in the U.S., Leo.
Yeah, I mean, as she reaches over and taps the shoulder of the U.S. congressman there from Massachusetts, who just smiled and didn't say a word, did he? That would have been a perfect opportunity for a real American congressman to say, ma'am, we have something in America called the First Amendment, and you can't regulate speech as easily or at all like you're able to do in your country, in Europe. But he didn't do that. And nor did Joe Manchin. In fact, Joe Manchin, speaking on another panel on the same topic of, quote, disinformation, he came out yesterday and said that the problem in America is our open press system. I kid you not. There's a video, I think, embedded in my article on that as well.
All right, let's play that. Here it is.
Yeah.
Let me back it up. You ready, guys? Here we go.
The problem that we have is the open press system and basically all the platforms. So if you're able to have five platforms, social platforms, that you can basically personify the extremes, somebody who is extremely right or extremely left, and it seems like that is the majority speaking. They're not the majority, but they're basically driving everybody to make a decision. What side are you on? Are you on this side or this side? And in America, there's only one side, the American side. It's not the Republican side or Democrat. We should be coming together to solve the problems from a different angle.
I'm going to play that again because I think it goes so fast. I'm going to go to the first part.
The problem that it's
unbelievable. He's saying if you're not part of the majority, you don't have the same rights, essentially, and that this open press system that we have in America is not good for us.
Yeah, I want you to hear just the first couple seconds to make sure, folks, you heard what he just said.
The problem that we have is the open press system.
So what does he want, a closed press system like they have in North Korea?
China?
Yep. Exactly.
Haven't they bragged, Tom DeWeese, that China is the model? Haven't we also seen the bust of Lenin over the shoulder of Klaus Schwab while he's being interviewed? So should we be shocked? Because at the end of the day, isn't it your friend, the late Henry Lamb, that called all this public-private partnership, as Klaus Schwab calls it? Wasn't Henry Lamb the one that said that this is really communitarianism, big government merging with big business, that Henry Lamb called communism light?
Yeah, absolutely. He was pointing that out, and I learned it from him. And this idea of a partnership between government and business, what you end up with in that situation is that the businesses that sign on and agree to help push these policies, they get all the goodies. They get tax breaks. They get maybe to put their business in the best location, various other things like that. They also get to help make legislation to help put their competition out of business. What the government gets out of it is that these big global corporations are using their massive advertising budgets to promote these ideas, selling them to the people. And so this is what we hear constantly, sustainable, sustainable, sustainable. It becomes a trigger word to get people to automatically respond in the way they want them to do that. So the public-private partnership is the cabal that puts that together, and these corporations become part of the government.
And of course, that means you end up with doing exactly what Joe Manchin wants, Tom and Patrick, and that is combining big government with big tech, the FBI with Twitter, the FBI with Facebook, and now you've got Christopher Wray, the FBI director, piece of human trash that he is, sitting over there, who I think should be now immediately you know, impeached. I don't, you know, he's appointed for a 10-year term. I don't know if the Congress, what they can do about him, but this guy should not be the FBI director. He's compromised, and now he's over there with a communist-aligned World Economic Forum sitting there like he's in agreement. Well, under his leadership, his agency has been breaking the laws, become an organization of absolute criminal activity, turning a blind eye to child molestation, sex trafficking, and everything else. And now he's sitting over there, you know, talking about, well, let him speak for himself.
I've got that video embedded in there as well.
Indeed,
yes.
Indeed you do, Leo. Leo's done a great work for us, made our job easy. Listen to the corrupt Christopher Wray.
And I think the sophistication of the private sector is improving, and particularly important, the level of collaboration between the private sector and the government, especially the FBI, has, I think, made significant strides. Pretty much every technology we could talk about today, we see both great opportunity, but great dangers.
Yeah.
So this is just proof, guys, that they are not worried about the peasants getting out of hand and uprising. Here he is sitting at a globalist private meeting, the FBI director, top law enforcement official outside of the attorney general in the United States, going overseas, speaking in front of globalists, leftists, and communists, and outright bragging. I mean, it's in your face right there, saying that the government, quote, especially the FBI, is working in collaboration with big tech to censor you stupid Americans because you can't be trusted with free speech. This is really astonishing. I mean, I never thought I would live to see this day.
Wow. Patrick?
I would give just one clarification. And you know I'm big on free speech because I'm also the director of Citizens for Free Speech, which is a nationwide organization protecting the First Amendment or defending the First Amendment. We should notice that this whole hate speech business, the whole universe of hate speech anything, the four of us, for instance, could not possibly execute hate speech towards each other. I could say something ugly about Tom or whatever. I mean, he would just turn me off and hang up the phone, probably. But hate speech, and this was something invented by them, not by us, not by just incidentally, oh, somebody came up with the idea of hate speech. The hate speech concept has only one context, and that is, if you talk against any of their narrative, Klaus Schwab wrote a book called The Great Narrative. If you talk against their narrative, that's hate speech. That demonstrates that you hate them. That's what hate speech is all about. That's the only context you'll ever hear it at the World Economic Forum. It really has nothing to do with anybody else intra-country, like between Democrats and Republicans, even though they'd like to confuse the issue and make you think that's the case. But in the end of it, the fountainhead of hate speech is, we hate you, Mr. Global. That's the bottom line. We hate you. We hate your policies. And they say, oh, that's hate speech. Well, they're absolutely right. It is hate speech. We hate them. We hate their policies. They can't take it. That's why they censor. That's why they got, you know, CIA and FBI employees embedded. They did at Twitter, for instance. They probably do at Facebook as well. They have taken over the media to enforce the narrative that the globalists have established through the World Economic Forum and the United Nations, period. That's the only context we should look at.
So, in other words, it's a one-sided hate speech.
Yes.
They can say
us hating them.
And they can say whatever they want about us, and that's not hate speech.
That's right. Whatever
laws they want, they can pass against us. They can say whatever they want about us. It's not hate speech. It's only when we disagree with them that it's hateful. And I'll tell you, one of the ethos of this is Herbert Marcuse of the Frankfurt School. Everyone knows him by this. He coined the phrase, make love, not war. And it was Herbert Marcuse who discipled the radicals of the 1960s, like Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton. And Herbert Marcuse wrote many books. He wrote Ethos, Civilization, and others, talking about making things erotica and using the erotica to offend the right, because what he called for was a Well, in fact, here's a quote. He said, one can rightfully speak of a cultural revolution since the protest is directed toward the whole cultural establishment, including the morality of existing society. So we're going to use perversion to offend people, get them to react. When they then react, we'll call them hateful. So we'll poke a stick in the eye until they say, uh-uh, not with my kid you don't. No, not with my community you don't. And then we'll say, racist, hate speech. So we're going to provoke them. He says, there is one thing we can say with complete assurance. The traditional idea of revolution and the strategy of revolution has ended. These ideas are old-fashioned. What we must undertake is a type of diffuse and disperse disintegration of the system. And that's what they've been doing, destroying the Judeo-Christian value system upon which our constitutional republic is underpinned. Then in 1965, he wrote a paper called Repressive Tolerance. 1965, Repressive Tolerance. Here's what he said, Herbert Marcuse of the Frankfurt School. They would include the kind of intolerance. He wanted to use intolerance. He said, we have to be more intolerant than the right. The right are intolerant, but we have to be more intolerant than they are by being intolerant of them. And that would include withdrawal of toleration of speech and assembly from groups and movements which promote aggressive policies. Armament, chauvinism, discriminations on the grounds of race and religion, are which oppose the extension of public services, Social Security, Medicare, etc. So if you're for the Second Amendment, if you're for traditional family values, that's chauvinism, if you are opposed to any religious ideology, Islam, if you're opposed to government welfare programs, extension of public services, you're intolerant and you should lose your right of freedom of speech and freedom of assembly, i.e. hate crimes. Tom?
Yeah. One of the things I'll say to people who accuse me of hate crimes and you know, that I'm a hate speech that I'm putting out is that I just ask them, you know, I'm a, you know, they always talk about tolerance and being more open and embracing more. I say, well, I'm a conservative. Are you going to embrace me? And then, no. Well, who's intolerant here? that's just what you got to deal with. The hypocrisy of these people is unbelievable. One thing I want to say, Brandon, I'm not sure how long we're going to go here, but as we talk about all these things, and I worry so much about good people getting really down and say, well, there's nothing we can do. I hear so many times people saying the Republic is dead. And there's nothing we can do. That these people are too powerful. That is not true. And they know that they're a minority in this world, but they have controlled the news media. They control a lot of the government and so forth. But I am traveling around the country, speaking with people, talking with them. As with Pat, we're teaching people how to fight back on this, and it's growing. And opposition is growing. I'm working with farmers in Iowa and some other states there, South Dakota, North Dakota. And finally, they are starting to stand up. And we're getting local elected officials, city councilmen, county commissioners, and so forth. They have the power to begin to turn this stuff around and stop a lot of the stuff in its tracks. We cannot lose sight of that. We have got to keep building on that. And do not start looking down and say in defeat, we can't beat them. Yes, we can. We just got to stay in the fight and help spread the word.
Yeah, we can't give up. Let me just take a quick little break here and just tell you guys, if you appreciate what we're doing, you're not going to see this on Fox News. You should. You're not going to see this on most outlets. You really aren't. And that's the beautiful thing about what we're doing. So again, folks, let me just stop real quick before we go back to the education, take this up to the top of the hour, 9 o'clock Central, 10 Eastern, and just say, if you appreciate what we're doing. And by the way, our bandwidth bill is thousands of dollars a month, all right? Thousands of dollars a month to put out free programming. And all the equipment and everything. And we've just, my network is now given a show to Patrick Wood every day. And you'll find it at WVWTV.com. Just started this week, WVWTV.com. You'll find his show. And again, if you appreciate what we're doing, we need your support. So here's a couple ways you can do it. One, will you go to MyPillow.com? Use that promo code B66. If you use any other code, we don't get credit. Please use that code B66. Sheets, towels, blankets, pet beds, slippers, sandals, mattresses, mattress toppers, robes, whatever. Check it out. B66, get savings and we get credit. Another way you can support us is go to WVWTVstore.com. WVWTVstore.com. There you'll find resources, including emergency freeze-dried food, little stoves with pots, and even water purifiers, so you can get your water, purify it, put it in a pot, put it on the little stove that we offer, and get some kindling and boil your water to make your freeze-dried food. So we've put everything in one place for you to be able to survive what it is they have planned for us. And we're going to get to that here with these guys in just a second. So please, I know you can get this stuff elsewhere. Thank you for getting it from us, because it's a big part of our general operating budget. They're at WVWTVstore.com, emergency freeze-dried food with a 25-year shelf life and a lot of other emergency supplies. WVWTVstore.com. And then if you appreciate what we're doing, you can also just contribute to our foundation, WVWFoundation.com, which exists to help people understand the times through the lens of a Christian worldview, to push out programming for free, not putting it behind a paywall and saying, to see this, you got to pay, but pushing it out. And then we have to cover the literally thousands of dollars a month in bandwidth bill for all the people that we're educating. So if you want to support our foundation, you can do that, including our Sunday night service that I host every Sunday night right here at 8 o'clock, as I have since 2015, right here at 8 o'clock Central. Our little church service we have every Sunday night, 8:15, where we open the Bible and look at the issues of the day through the lens of the Bible. So again, support our foundation if you would. WVWFoundation.com, WVWFoundation.com. If you want to order any of the resources online or donate over the phone, I should say, to order them over the phone or donate over the phone, you can use that number even right now, 901-468-9357, 901-468-9357. Before we go to a clip of Tony Blair, let me ask you something about this World Economic Forum, which fits with the North American Union, which is all tied into the UN and Agenda 21. Let's not forget Klaus Schwab's wife sits on one of the boards related to the Sustainable Development Goals. I have the screenshot. I can bring that up. So when we talk about a North American Union, Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, the World Economic Forum, the Great Reset, they're all connected. We've been talking about that. They're all connected. What do you make, I don't know who wants to go on this first, but wasn't it in 2020 that Klaus Schwab was warning us that we could have a massive cyber attack that would bring down all of our banking and everything? I know, when these guys warn about a pandemic or a massive cyber attack that brings down your banking, and then you got the FDIC holding their meeting in November of last year that we've been playing the clips of, saying, well, there are going to be runs on the bank, and there are going to be bail-ins. Again, are they going to manufacture the food crisis? We got the Rockefellers in their 2020 report called Reset the Table saying they're going to nationalize the food. We have all of these attacks on our food processing plants. They're killing chickens and fowls left and right. This seems awfully orchestrated between the attack on our food, our finances, our border. Then you add in the cyber attacks that could happen with banking, massive inflation. Who wants to go first? It seems like they're trying to orchestrate the crisis, or as I said in a series last year, the great collapse is necessary for the great reset. Who wants to take that?
Yeah, I'll tackle that, Brandon. There is an attempt by this globalist cartel, for lack of a better term, to control the energy, the food, and the money system. You control those three things, and you basically have people dependent on the authorities for their next meal, and throw war into the mix, and we're also going to be in an even weaker position. That's why, while I agree with Tom that we can get through this and we can possibly defeat these people, I don't think it's going to come through any politicians. Even at the local level, although that's not across the board, I know there are some areas where you will be able to defeat it at the local level with your local city council, your local county commission. But the majority of the majority of the local governmental boards will fold their tent. Why? Because they're addicted to federal money. And you threaten to pull those federal grants, which make up 20, 30, 40% of their budget in some cases, and they're going to fold like a cheap tent. But I still do agree with Tom that we can defeat this. How do we do it? Don't look to politicians. We're going to have to own this ourselves. And the way that you defeat it is through resistance and non-compliance. I can't tell you how I've been trying to drum this through people into people's heads over the last 2.5 years, going on 3 years now, trying to give people not only encouragement, but practical ways that they can fight this globalist cabal. You can only do it by disobeying, civil disobedience, non-compliance with what they are asking us to do. If they want to take your gas stove, make sure you have a nice, new, well-conditioned gas stove. Make sure you have a nice wood stove if you need an alternative source of heating your home. These are things they don't want. Make sure you pay with cash whenever possible. They want you to use digital money. Make sure that you drive a gas car. Don't run out and buy an electric car. You're feeding right into this beast that is trying to oppress us when you do these things. This is the way we need to wake more people up and also prepare. Prepare, like you were saying, Brandon, get freeze-dried food. Stock up, stock your pantry up. Get extra food, extra water. All of the things that we will need to make it through hard times, because when this collapse happens, that's when we have our great reset. That's when the patriots can maybe rebuild this country into something better than what it's become.
Well, we have no choice but to resist, because if we don't, it's slavery. I mean, it's like what Winston Churchill said, you may have to fight with all the odds against you. You may come to a point where we have no hope of victory, but it's better to perish than to live as slaves, right? You know,
absolutely.
I like better dead than red, right, Tom?
That's right. Yeah, let me just say, Brandon and Leo, I agree with what you're saying. And a great example of what you're saying is you look at these corporations that have come out very clearly woke. Look at Coca-Cola that came out saying we can't be so white. Look at Disney, what's happened there, and many other corporations. When they've said these things, all of a sudden they have lost billions of dollars as people quit going there. That
yes.
is a major example of how large our side is and the power that we have. I will say that in local communities and what we're teaching people and building freedom pods and so forth, and dealing with local elected politicians, there is a way to use them as well, but we have to do both. And I agree with you, Leo, and how we go about that.
One of the people
we definitely need to get you here, Tom, in Coweta County, Georgia, because we have a all Republican county that voted 75-77% for Donald Trump. It's one of the reddest counties in Georgia. We have an all-Republican county commission, and there's not one member of that county commission who is doing anything to fight back against this this agenda coming down from the World Economic Forum and the federal government.
Well, speaking of Georgia, let's go to this clip of your governor that's embedded in your article at leoholman.com, where you have Governor Brian Kemp of Georgia. Here we go. Here's what he had to say on CNBC from Davos.
Governor Brian Kemp joins us this morning. It is great to have you here this morning. What are you doing here, number one? And would you say
like
Georgia?
We'd all like to know that.
Davos, I'm trying to think. They're not Atlanta and Davos aren't like sister cities, I don't think.
Could you
go any further around the spectrum to Davos from what I think of as Georgia?
Well, to answer your question, look, I'm here selling our great state. I mean, we have so many good things going on. Our economy, we've had 2 record years in a row with job growth and investment. Our mid-year numbers that I got while I was on the way out here are set to break last year's record if you take out the Rivian and Hyundai deals, which you don't get those, you know.
All right, so he's there. What was he doing there, Leo, your governor?
Well, he's there selling. He left one word out. He said he was there to sell. He was there selling the state. In my opinion, he's there selling out the state.
Yes.
He's selling out the state to these billionaire globalists. He mentioned Hyundai. He mentioned Derivian. And he went on to say in that interview that many of the big corporate relocations that he has lured to Georgia have to do with the electric mobility, electricity, the movement towards electric mobility, meaning electric car batteries and things that are right in line with the Davos agenda to bring everything online and dependent on the electric grid. Why? Because it's easier to control. If you have an electric stove and electric appliances, it's easier to control that than it is if you have a natural gas stove. It's much easier to control your transportation and freedom of movement if you're driving around in an electric car as opposed to a older gas-fueled car. Why? Because these electric cars are hooked to the internet. They have all kinds of monitoring devices on them. They have remote kill switches in many cases. And this is the wave of the future if we follow the WEF World Economic Forum agenda, and Brian Kemp is all on board with that agenda.
Absolutely. One of the guys that was at Davos, who we've been warning about for years, is Tony Blair. Tony Blair being part of the Labor Party, the Fabian Socialists, which, of course, we remember the Fabian window, George Bernard Shaw in 1910, two men banging on a hot earth has come out of a fire right behind one of the guys. So the world is on fire. One of the guys is blowing the fire up with a bellow. He's blowing it up, making the crisis bigger. Then they melt the earth, and then they remold it. And at the Fabian window at the top, it says, remold it nearer to the heart's desire. That's the Fabian society that gave birth to the Labor Party. That is Tony Blair, who's praised the Fabian Social Society. And Tony Blair, as I wrote in my book, The Coming Religious Reich in 2015, he's one of the people pushing for hate crime laws. He wants to use anyone that would deny the Holocaust to prosecute you. And a lot of the Jews are saying, we don't like Holocaust deniers, but we also like free speech. So that's a backdoor to taking free speech. Don't try that. Tony Blair's trying it. So Tony Blair is also there in Davos talking about taking one of our other freedoms, freedom of movement. Listen to what Tony Blair had to say at Davos just in the last few hours.
Because in the end, you need the data. You need to know who's been vaccinated and who hasn't been. Some of the vaccines that will come on down the line will be multiple. There'll be multiple shots. So you've got to have, for reasons to do with the healthcare more generally, but certainly for a pandemic or for vaccines, you've got to have a proper digital infrastructure. And many countries don't have that. In fact, most countries don't have that. So again, you've got to say, okay, who are the people that can make this happen? How do you get the right partnerships in place?
So there are going to be more pandemics, Patrick, that require multiple vaccines. How does he know that?
Yeah, well, yeah, just wild guess. No, I'll tell you what. The only thing these people have to sell, kind of back to your original point, is this threat here. The people at Davos and the as well as the United Nations, they only have one thing to sell. One thing to sell, and that's fear. Everything they do, the threats that come out, the outrageous things, whether it's global warming and the ice caps are going to melt and the polar bears are going to die, it's always fear, fear, fear. So when Klaus Schwab says we should fear a internet meltdown or some other thing, fear is their key to stampeding people into doing what they really want them to do, which is accept sustainable development and the Great Reset. That's the goal. That's the prize. The fear drives people into that. And that's one reason we say you need to just put fear aside. The Bible is very clear about this, by the way. We are not to fear. At least Christians are not to be fearful. It's a sin to be fearful. We should not be afraid of these people. But the flip side to this is courage. And Tom will amen this, I expect. Courage is also contagious. Like fear is contagious, courage is contagious. Just look at the heroes that have been awarded the Silver Star or the Congressional Medal of Honor, who went into battle against impossible odds, exhibited courage, and people followed them because the courage was contagious and they did great things. We need to remember this in the resistance movement, that courage indeed is contagious. And the more people are coming out of the woodwork right now, around our country at least, starting to wake up, they need to see people leading the charge. Yes, if we can do it, you can do it. Join us. I'm thinking about an old song, by the way. I love this. It's back, I think, Oscar and Hammerstein, way back in the 40s or 50s. Give me some men, some stout-hearted men. Wonderful song of courage. We need to remember this, that their fear is one thing, our courage is another.
And isn't that the whole agenda in part of the Frankfurt School, the Marxist Frankfurt School? They say we're going to come to America and we're going to destroy a patriarchal society. We're going to destroy the masculine man, and we'll deem a masculine man to be a fascist. We'll deem him to be an authoritarian. And one of them wrote a book in 1950 called Authoritarianism, and it was all about what makes you a fascist. And if you are a patriotic man of conviction, you are a fascist, and you would fail their F-scale test, written by Theodore Adorno in 1950. So this idea of attacking the American man and calling him a fascist or a hater or a racist, that goes against what you're saying, Patrick. We need masculine men, but they said we'll destroy them, because once you remove the John Waynes of the culture, there won't be anyone to oppose us. And by the way, to bring all this back around where we started with the North American Union and showing that it's all connected to Great Reset, Agenda 21, look at this again from the White House website, January 10th, 2023. Sustainability, right? Right there, sustainability. And what else? Climate change, right? Climate change. There's that word, climate change, right there. Climate change. So that's what they're after. And then we keep going through it and we find out that they're talking about greenhouse gases, greenhouse emissions, and then we find out they're talking about batteries, electric vehicle batteries. So the whole North American Declaration of North America, it keeps having that same Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, Great Reset narrative. You can't separate them. I want to point out real quick and have you guys then each give closing comments. This is a paper by the Accuracy in Media. No, this is by the Center for Immigration Studies, Todd Bensman's with this group. This was written in 2007. Here's one of the things they said in 2007, and it was all about a North American Union, the Security and Prosperity Partnership. He said the Trilateral North America Forum, chaired jointly by former high officials from Mexico, Canada, and the U.S., they had the then Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld there. They had Timothy Keating, the U.S. Northern Command head, and they had others there from big corporations. And they're there meeting in 2006 on this idea of a North American Union. And they went on to say that the conference notes that they had to get from Freedom of Information Act show the attendees considered the Mexican view, advocating a change to where the three North American nations are, quote, focused on the best interest of North America, end quote, not national interest. What is in the best interest of a North American Union? Not what is in the best interest of America, America first. You see, that's why they hate us. But then the direction of Mexico's influence over the Security Prosperity Partnership was clear. Quote, troops on the border send an enormously powerful negative message. Tremendously and enormously powerful negative message. So you can't have any troops on the border. Quote, North America needs to be more competitive, and yet security goals seem to interfere with this outcome. Closing borders with troops seems to be counter to a continual continental vision. So again, closing borders with troops seems to be counter to a continental vision. So as you see them flooding over the borders, they made it very clear. One reason we can't have troops and a fence is that's not the imagery we're going for. We're going to open the borders. We're going to erase them. And we're going to force a North American Union on everybody. Closing comments first with you, Tom.
Yeah, absolutely right on that. And as Pat was saying, fear being the tool, the whole climate change, if they're going to start to, and they're already working to cut back on our food supply. It's funny because as you know, you talk to people around every day, and this whole thing about we're going to be eating bugs, and 99% of the people in this country are saying, absolutely not. They're never going to get me to do that. And I thought about this one day and I thought, what's the plan? The plan is there is no alternative food left, and that's all you have. And that's what they're going to offer, a fear again. And I think about, bravery and standing up to all this stuff. And I think about our founding fathers, and particularly Sam Adams, who was the one who really started the American Revolution. And you think about what he did up against the most powerful force on earth. And he stood up and he said no. And he said that we don't need a majority to fight back. We need a determined minority to set the brush fires of freedom. And that's my inspiration. That's why I do what I do. And this is what we all have to look at. Stand up and say no. And have that opposition to everything.
And Tom's website is AmericanPolicy.org. Patrick?
Well, we've covered a lot of ground. I don't know I can add any more to this. These people are not invincible. They put their pants on the same way we do. Well, we won't go into what the ladies do with their skirts, but, we do. And they're people. They're not infallible. In many cases, they're dumber than a box of rocks. And, they're uncoordinated many times. They're confused by their own policies. They're conflicted. They've got cognitive dissonance rattling around in their own head. We can take advantage of this. And I'll tell you, people who are clear thinkers, who understand the importance of a nation and the fact that we can never reclaim this nation if we lose it, those people who are really thinking clearly are totally mismatched with the people with the global elite who are just in such a fog all the time. We have the upper hand on strategy. We have the upper hand on intelligence. And I think we have the upper hand on strength as well. Even if we don't have money, moral character and the moral high ground counts as much for money, in my opinion, as anything else. That's what led the American Revolution in the first place, was conviction of moral, of the moral high ground that they were on, and they stuck to their guns. We need to do the same thing. This is how we need to lead our country, at least the people in our country, how we need to lead them to stand up and exercise the freedoms that they have today. They may not have them tomorrow. Today is the day to exercise it.
Absolutely. Patrick Wood, technocracy.news, technocracy.news. He also, as of this week, has a brand new TV show over on my channel, WVWTV.com, WVWTV.com. It's on demand as well as live. Check it out over there. Closing comments, my friend Leo.
Yeah, I mean, hard to follow up those acts. Two very eloquent closing comments there by my friends on this panel. But just stay strong, make a stand. Now is the time. What we don't do today, it will be too late to do tomorrow. So now is the time to make a stand for freedom and share the articles that you find, share the videos that you find on this channel with all your friends and family.
Thank you, Leo. LeoHolman.com. He's got a brand new article tonight with a lot of these videos embedded. LeoHolman.com. Thank you, guys. Great panel. And folks, where will you find such an esteemed panel and knowledgeable panel that's been fighting this for so many decades? And why aren't other outlets doing it? Well, aren't you glad for this outlet? If you are, support us. We need to hear from you, your support, and get something you need at the same time. MyPillow.com. Use that promo code B66. You get savings, we get credit. Now, we're going to post this show tonight on frankspeech.com and on my TV channel, WVWTV.com. So it'll be posted late tonight at WVWTV.com. So tomorrow morning, Friday morning, January 20th, 2023, I hope you'll go there, WVWTV.com or frankspeech.com. Grab the URL. Spread it everywhere. Get your people and friends educated. This was quite the panel. And if you appreciate, again, what we're doing, don't forget about my foundation, WVWFoundation.com. WVWFoundation.com. Thanks again to my esteemed panel. And thank you for being here and for watching. Till next time, I'm Brandon House. Take care. Hello, I'm Brandon House. If you appreciate this 24-hour-a-day free broadcast platform, will you consider supporting us? One way you can support us to keep pushing out free programming to people all over the world is by joining in partnership with WVW Foundation. The WVW Foundation exists to proclaim the truth of a biblical worldview, to help people understand the times through the lens of a biblical worldview. If you appreciate that, we appreciate your partnering with WVWFoundation.com. That's WVWFoundation.com. If you prefer to support us through the mail, the mailing address is WVW Foundation, P.O. Box 1690, Collierville, Tennessee 38027. If you prefer to support us over the phone, you can make a contribution by calling 901-468-9357. That's 901-468-9357. Your support of the WVW Foundation, as I said, allows us to push out free programming. Many people put their programming behind a paywall. If you don't catch it live, you don't get to see it. WVW Foundation is committed to working with WVW Broadcast Network to push out programming as a ministry of the Foundation. The Foundation also sponsors a Sunday night service that I've been hosting since 2015. If you'd like to join us for our Sunday night service, you can do so every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Central Time at WVWTV.com/live. WVWTV.com/live. Thanks again for your support of the WVW Foundation at WVWFoundation.com.